Welcome back to the final block, the British Judo podcast, where we interview members of the World Class Performance Programme and others that have been involved with British Judo in the past. I'm back here with my co-host, Denny Roberts. How you doing, Den?
How you doing, Chris? Exciting episode coming up today.
Indeed it is, yeah. We're interviewing a couple of members of staff that work within our medical provision in the programme. So first up, we'll have legend of the visually impaired and Paralympic program, John Prescott. And shortly after that, we'll be followed by our Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Joe Banks.
Very exciting.
Yeah, exciting stuff. And it's very interesting, especially given that both of these guys have been working on the front line with battling COVID-19. So they've been doing a sterling job for the country and not just for our program.
Excellent. Can't wait.
So first up, we've got John Prescott. How you doing, John?
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, I'm doing very well, thank you. How's yourself?
Not too bad, thanks. Not too bad. Good, so John, you're also we'll call you Preki because that's how we know you anyway. Preki's he's also working on the front line of the NHS at the moment, fighting the COVID-19 crisis. So how's that been for you so far? Can you just explain a little bit about what your role is within the hospital at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm based obviously in Manchester, so there's a Manchester Royal Infirmary. I'm based in the A&E department there. I'm what's called a specialist emergency nurse practitioner, so I really in theory see lots of injuries, broken bones, that kind of thing in A&E. But obviously with it being the front line, we had the COVID patients coming in, you know, sometimes turning up on the doorstep or being brought in by ambulance. It's been, I would probably say, the strangest time I've known in the NHS all my career. And I started in the NHS in 1990. And I'll probably not see this kind of thing ever again. We've gone from one extreme of being overrun, so battered and bruised in there. And now, thank goodness, we seem to be easing off from the patients coming in. A&E generally has been quieter in the last couple of months, because people are frightened. People are frightened of coming in, thinking they're worried about the COVID. It's been so strange, but the, you know, a bit like when the judo, when you're away, the camaraderie's been brilliant, gets us through every day. And the amount of well-wishing and people helping, it's been amazing, you know. And it's a hard thing to say amazing in such a crisis, but yeah, it's opened my eyes a lot.
So staying on that sort of humour sort of side of it, Becky, is that what's getting you through? I know, like, from personal experience, you're a funny guy, and that's how you seem to sort of, one of your coping mechanisms. Is that what does the NHS or do the people in your sort of working environment use that to get through a situation like this?
I think, you know, everybody has their own little ways of dealing things, whether, you know, they might go in a room on their own for 5 minutes, you know, reevaluate things. I tend to like to make sure the staff around us are happy, because it is stressful, it is hard, you know. And, you know, I have seen some of the nursing staff and the medical staff just break down and cry, you know, and that's difficult, you know, that's difficult to look at, difficult to watch. And 5 minutes later, you wouldn't know it, they're dealing with another patient. You know, we just try and keep everybody's spirits up, you know, and I'll have my down days, and then your colleague next to you gets it right, you know. Just got to make sure that the tone of the jokes are okay.
Of course. As Denny says, you're one of these guys that's generally regarded one of the funny guys in the Paralympic team, and I think you describe that as your method of trying to cheer everybody else around you up and also keep yourself going. And we've obviously seen that more firsthand within the judo program. So there'll be so many people that have worked with you throughout the time that you've been in. How many games is it now that you, well, the Tokyo Games would be your fourth,
this
was it?
I think this would have been my fourth. So my first one was Beijing, and that was my official games. I actually worked on the run into Athens, and I worked up to the point where we stayed at the pre-event, so we're in Cyprus. So I started actually working in with judo, I think it was 2003, but my first official games was the Beijing, and obviously we had Beijing. The big one was London, which was amazing, Rio, and then sadly Tokyo was the big one this time, but it's going to be another hopefully 12-18 months, you know, fingers crossed when all that comes again.
What made you first sort of join British Judo, Greggy, and make that decision to join a sport like this?
It was a strange thing, because as you guys know, judo wasn't a sport that I've undertaken at school or anything like that. So a long story short, I was playing rugby league, and I was playing with a couple of guys in the team. One was called Martin McSorley, who obviously British Judo know, and Steve Ravenscroft. And we were playing, and I'd run into a... While I was playing, I'd run into the opposing player, and I split his head open. It was purely accidental. Because of my background in A&E, after the match, I stitched his head up. It seemed the nice thing to do, because, you know, that's what you got to do, and it was my fault that it happened. And at the time, Stevie, Rebo and Martin, they didn't really know my job. And they just... So obviously they were saying, what do I do? And at the time, they were working with the visually impaired squad. And they just returned from Russia. And while they were in Russia, they'd had an accident where one of the guys had walked into one of the glass doors and needed stitching. And I think they had lots of trouble in Russia getting that done. So they asked me, would I be interested in just the odd trip? That was their words, the odd trip. So I said, yeah, you know, it'd be nice to help out. In them days, I was a nurse practitioner, so just specialised in emergency medicine, and it just escalated from there, and I'm still here all these years later, and a lot more grey hairs.
So how have those just the odd trips been? You're talking now about 16 years really that you've been doing this. So how do you find the experiences of travelling away with the Paralympic guys?
Look, I mean, at first it was new. It was you know, I look back then and I'm probably a totally different person now. I think always from day one, with it being the Paralympic team, and that's where it's difficult. You know, if you're with the fully sighted team, I think your role's quite different as a physio. Whereas I think with us and with the VI team, you're not just the physio. You're a helper, you know, even if it's just helping someone get a meal, even if it's get someone around the hotel, explaining who's this, who's that, you know, telling them not to swear when there's someone nearby because they're going to hear you, you know, the laughs, the jokes we have. It's a multi, I would say it's multi role. And I know, as you guys know, because you're with the guys, you know, even when you're, especially with Denny, you know, when the coaching, you know, there's a different aspect to your coaching when it is with the VIs. And again, it's the same when I'm doing with the medical. And I love every bit, and every trip I seem to enjoy more than the last one. As long as that keeps going, I'm happy.
Yeah, hopefully that's the case. And I think your humour will help us along that way.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, from personal experience, I can agree with you there. It's a totally different way of working because of the extra considerations you have to make, because there's not only visual impairment with them, there's often a hearing impairment or some other issues that come with their disability. So we do have to be a bit more flexible in terms of how we work and a bit more understanding of their limitations, I suppose. So again, I do keep labouring the point that you've been doing this for so long, but I don't mean to be. But you've obviously seen the sport itself develop over that period of time. How would you say it's changed as a sport from when you started to how you see it now?
I think probably the biggest compliment I could give it is I think it gets nearer and nearer to the sighted game, you know. In my first few, I'd probably say the first 18 months, 2 years, a lot of B1 athletes, so the guys who couldn't see, you know, maybe walk around with a cane or maybe even needed a guide dog. And, you know, it's, I don't know whether it's a sad thing or just a thing that's not to progress, but when you go, probably we'll find in Tokyo, there'll be a minimal amount of B1 athletes in the judo world. But a lot of the athletes are maybe B2 and B3, which is obviously a standard that they attain to when they are visually impaired. I think that's been the massive difference. But you see the professionalism. And I've got to say, I think British judo's led the way all this time. You know, I think we're always one step ahead of the other countries. But that's because British Judo Association, they embraced the visually impaired squad. You know, they didn't see that in any way, shape or form, that it was a minority. And, you know, it just shows you when we're at Walsall, you know, the guys train with the sighted athletes, you know. They're treated as part and parcel of the team. And that's just excelled. And it's been amazing, you know. And the journey just continues, doesn't it? And the standard, I would say, year on year, improves. Definitely.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think you always get the... Every year there seems to be some random guy that comes in that's just exceptional and yeah. You're getting it across a few more weights now, that there's always that sort of one player that's drifted either from the sort of sighted environment or another sort of combat sport and sort of merged into judo. Yeah, I think the level's gone up even since I've been here.
You definitely like Denny, because even when, you know, the guys you know who are around, you know, I think a classic example was Sam's Gogachuri. You know, one of the guys who know a lot about Gogachuri was Sam's coach, Ewan Burton, you know. And, you know, when you speak to Ewan, apparently, I don't think I've got it right, he may have even fought him in a competition at one time or another, or was in the same competition. You know, so, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think absolutely. There's so many guys now, and women, in fact, coming across into the visually impaired side of the sport from the Olympic side. And Gogachuri, as you've mentioned, he was actually number 6 in the world at one point in sighted judo, which shows the level of the guy.
He's
a serious competitor on the world stage at sighted judo. So the standard that he brings across to the sport and the profile that he brings to it is huge.
And that, and he's been beaten, which is, you know, almost a great thing. You know, he's been beaten by another visually impaired athlete, you know.
And Skelly's going to beat him again in 2021, so...
Absolutely, yeah.
Exactly. Line has been set up already, we're building up to it.
Becky, just a quick sort of fire question. What's your best sort of top 3 moments that you've experienced over the years that you've been involved in the sport?
With some of the best. I'd say right up there was the Ben Quilter at London, when he'd had the quite serious knee injury.
I've not heard this story.
Have you not? Well, oh yeah, it just changes every day. Yeah, it goes from to carrying his knee off the mat. That was a massive thing on a personal level as well, because I remember getting the phone call from Ben. Again, cut a long story short, he rung me up. That was it. His games was over. It's finished. We actually met up a couple of weeks later. He came down to my house for a few days. We chatted. I was almost like the shoulder to cry on. And at the end of it, he just said, "Do you think we should do it?" And we spoke to then. It was Craig White was the doctor, and we got a few people involved, and we said, "Can it get any worse?" And I know that sounds awful, but it was his decision that he wanted to carry on. And to watch Ben then come back, limited as he was, to claim the bronze medal, I think that's got to be right up there. I think seeing Sam get his first bronze medal at Beijing was amazing, considering the rise he made. It was quite phenomenal. And sometimes the other thing, I think, it's not a one-off thing. It's been with the coaches when the players work out and it works well. You know, I like to sometimes just take a back seat and watch the coach's reaction when the fighter's won or he wins a medal, or if he just carries out the plans that he's done, you know what I mean? Because I know, you know, you guys work you know, tirelessly at that. And that's sometimes a wonderful thing to see, you know, just the elation on the coaching, the support team around them. Yeah, I'd say. I think certainly the Ben and the Sam would have been the first two things that were amazing.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear the way that you made your third point there was very much about the people involved rather than the judo itself. I think, in fact, all of those really are more about the people involved than the judo itself. So most people probably wouldn't be aware of this, but you normally, during a competition, will stay in the warm-up area and not actually watch any of the judo at all. That's just how you like to do things. Do you want to explain that a little bit for us?
Yeah, I think it's... I think sometimes, especially with the visually impaired athletes, in the earlier days, if you had an athlete that was, say, quite a poor B2 or a B1, you know, they can become quite, they're not sure whether, you know, they might just get brought into another entrance into that hall or into the training area. And sometimes you're the first point of contact. They might have an injury. They might just need a quick chat, you know. They need somewhere to sit down and... either, you know, discuss what they've just fought, or like I said, or even treatment. And I just found it was really from the day one, it was very much, I'm here, this is what we do. And sometimes, I remember just the once, it was in a European competition, I went to try and watch a final, and one of our boys had dislocated his finger. And very annoyingly at the time, they wouldn't let me back into the warm-up area when he was coming back. And that was only the one-off time, and I thought, never again now, you know, I'm always there. So I sometimes wait in here for the crowd, whether it's a big cheer or a groan, and I have another minute and wait for them to come in, and then usually, I think Denny will tell you, I'll give a look as they walk in the room, and they usually give me either a thumbs up or the thumbs down, and I know where to take the next part of the conversation.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, as a coach, going in and out of that environment, it's great to have a central point that I know that I can head back to after the fight's done. But yeah, it's that coming through the warm up area, and then I know you're always the first face I see, and it's always you always give me a look of like, oh, thumbs up or thumbs down, like you just said. And it's great to have that, like, in the environment. And even for the coaches, I know, like, yeah, John can say the same thing, as in you're someone at, like, external, and I've always thought this of physios anyway, is just you're someone external to talk to, like, is not like you've got a role to play, but you're not like in like buried in it as much as sort of the coaches are. So you can always give that sort of clarity of, well, okay, maybe you thought about this. And it's always nice to have that in the environment as well, like as a coach.
Yeah, I think it's important for the coach as well, you know. Because sometimes, you know, as you know, Denny, and I know Chris, when we've been around, sometimes you guys will come and sit next to me when I'm not, you know, I'm not busy. We'll have a chat when I'm not treating all every other international country anyway. That's an old I'll get mentioned. But, you know, sometimes you guys will come up and sometimes it's just a chat about something and nothing, you know, just to break the atmosphere, break the tension. You know, it all adds up to hopefully successful days when we're at the competition, and that's why we do it. You know, that's why we enjoy it so much.
It's really nice in, like, the environment you create around the boys and girls in the program. I mean, your room, it's the physio room, but it's the counselling room. It's the place where everyone sort of congregates to chat and have fun. It's like the central sort of focus of every trip. And I know there's a lot of country music playing on, but you can't have everything, you know what I mean? So... But I know you keep a lot of guys entertained, Brecky, with your impersonations and stuff like that.
Well, you know, we try and keep it light and as much as we can. And I do, you know, and on a serious note, I it feels strange when I'm away if there's not people in my room. Do you know what I mean? I almost worry. I think, well, you know, what's wrong? What's going on? And that's how we want it. That's how it should be. Do you know what I mean? My room being... you know, the hub, and then it allows also you guys, the coaches, because sometimes you need that half an hour, just to chill, relax, refocus, and yeah, and hopefully it just can, the country music just gets better and better, but I keep telling you that, you won't believe it, so.
I'm sure you've been converting a few people to the country music, and Johnsy's definitely got some more of that on his playlist now. So you're slowly changing people, I think. Then you mentioned your impersonation, right? We're not going to be able to let you go until we've got your top three impersonations of famous people. So what we got, Preki?
Okay, so I think this will be one for the older generation, I know. But we used to have lots of fun with this, and there was a guy called Frank Spencer. And
every now some mothers do have him, yeah.
Well, some of us had him a bill, I tell you. And I used to talk all the time, and occasionally,
and that's amazing. Have a
conversation, but it never really happened. But one day I will, I'll hold it. So that was the Frank Spencer, who I probably learned to do that when I was about 12. So that's how old we're getting.
Many experience in doing that one.
My second one, we'd probably, hopefully, a few more people, the Chris Eubank. Obviously, and when I was fighting, I thought I'd have done. And I had a done, but I can fight, but I beat him once, I love you, Karen, I'm coming home. And beat him once, and I beat him again. And we all know what happened. And I just
thought, such a talent. It's just such hidden talent, don't they?
You know what? This is the only thing that's kept you in the program all these years, mate.
Well, that's it, yeah. No one's ever really read my CV. That's
and okay, stop messing around and do Chris Eubank, come on.
I think the third one I'll give you would have been the old favourite was the Alan Hansen one. That was absolutely diabolical. He's got power, he's got peace. I think if you get that ball down the line and cross it, you'll score your goals. And I'll tell you, goals will win games every time. And I think he's quality, absolute quality.
Heard about what an absolutely surreal interview this has been. I didn't know so many famous people would be on it.
Yeah. I know, it's incredible, really.
It's like celebrity screen. I think you get that kind
of... Do that again, Brett.
I say it's like celebrity squares watching each other on this. I remember a show like this.
No, I just want to say like a big thank you on behalf of Pitch Judo and behalf of myself really for everything you do for the lads and the coaches when you are away, Preki, and especially for what you're doing now on the front line of the NHS. Just a big thank you to you and everyone that's doing this sort of same sort of role that's having anything to do with judo or part of judo and just in this sort of wider sort of scene of it. Thank you, a big thank you.
Thank you, guys. I mean, it's like you say, it's surreal times. I mean, it's vice versa, though. You know, we do it, we get on with it, and, you know, it's so lovely. Like, the public over the last, you know, few months, it's been amazing, you know. But, you know, ultimately, we want to get back to normal because, you know, I want to get back down to the judo. We want to get back to doing what we do every day, you know, or you guys do every day, and I'm allowed to just come every few weeks and take all the credit, then go again, you know.
I know you do like to take all the credit.
I try my very best.
your reviews of the physio provision are always of the highest order. So. I'd just like to second as well what Danny said there. Like, as he said, when you're away on trips with us as well, you're always that point of contact for a bit of a lighter moment or a bit of a chat and stuff. So you've got a vital role within the team that isn't just alongside your professional one. And yeah, equally, like the work you're doing just now is probably amongst the most important that you'll ever do. So just want to say my profound thanks to you as well for that.
Thank you.
And then also just thank you for coming on and having a chat with us just now. It's been really great to chat to you and help you share your experiences with the Paralympic program as well as your current experiences in NHS. And look forward to seeing you again, hopefully, once this is all wrapped up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure. Obviously, great to catch up with you guys anyway. And we'll get there eventually in the end. And thank you for inviting me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Frank.
Absolute pleasure.
Hi guys, really interesting to listen to John Prescott there, and obviously a few of his famous impressions. The next part of the show, we're going over to Dr. Joe Banks, who is our Chief Medical Officer. Hi Joe, how are you?
Hey, not bad. How are you guys?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. So, Joe, you've been working in the British Judo Programme for a number of years now. Sort of sometimes just in an event-based capacity, but in the last few years you became the Chief Medical Officer for the association. So you've got a fair amount of experience in the sport now, haven't you?
Yeah, just a bit. About probably about 14 years, I think, I've been involved altogether. So, yeah, it's gone quick. It's passed quickly. Good fun.
Joe, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself, as in what kind of doctor are you? I just know you as Joe, the super doc, and I'm sure that's not your official title. So tell us what it should be. What kind of doctor are you?
So I'm I'm an orthopaedic and trauma consultant. So I work at a major trauma centre in Liverpool. So I do elective work, which is mainly knee surgery, predominantly knee injuries and treating arthritis and other kind of knee problems. And then on the trauma side of things, so that's injuries, pretty much anything. We don't do any spines. We've got our own team for them, but other than that, pretty much anything. And because I work in a major trauma centre, then it's the kind of the all the big stuff that we get, the people with multiple injuries. Sadly not all of them live to tell the tale, but we save as many as we can, and we also get the more minor injuries that come in off the streets too, so it keeps us out of mischief.
Yeah, it sounds like very, very interesting sort of field of work to be in. What made you want to sort of enroll into elite sport and especially judo, and talk about why are you a part of judo? What made you go down that route?
Yeah, so I've always done lots of sport. I played a lot of football when I was a kid. I did judo when I was younger. My second shoulder dislocation put pay to my judo career, unfortunately. But I still had a lot of friends in the sport, and I guess I got involved as a doctor when one of our local clubs were having a competition, and the doctor that was due to do it couldn't make it at short notice. And because I had friends that were there, they knew that. That I was a doctor, so they asked me to come and be the doctor for the event. Then kind of one thing led to another. I think having a doctor that kind of understands the sport and understands the rules and stuff is a bit of a novelty sometimes. It certainly was then anyway. And then one event kind of leads to another, and then before you know it, you're part of the team that covers all of the domestic events. There's normally about six big domestic events in the UK each year, kind of national and international level. So I've been doing that for, as I say, probably about 14 years now, I think. And then I had a pretty close working relationship with our previous chief medical officer. I'd operated on quite a few of the number of our athletes prior to that. So when Keith retired, it was kind of an obvious move, really.
Yeah, Keith was as you say, he was the chief medical officer before you, and he retired a couple of years ago. I just want to give a shout out to Keith, because he's actually just recovered himself from a bout of COVID, and he's back on the front line as of Monday this week. So all the best to Keith and his wife. Which leads us on a little bit to towards the kind of COVID-19 side of things. You're obviously on the front line of this,
in your
day-to-day work. Can you tell us a little bit about how that's been from your perspective?
Yeah, so as a surgeon, I mean, our work has just completely changed. I mean, it has with most hospital workers. I think it doesn't really matter what specialty you are anymore. You're a doctor, and you're there to treat whoever comes in through the door. And you know, everybody's jobs have changed. We've all been very much out of our comfort zones. working in different ways. There's obviously not been any elective surgery while it's not safe to do so. So instead, we've been running the minor injuries unit in A&E. We've been involved in proning patients on intensive care. Obviously, people are still going to smash themselves to pieces. So there's still trauma that we've been operating on. But the spirit in the hospital has been amazing. And, you know, I think a lot of hospitals were, in the end, thankfully, quite over-prepared for this because lockdown worked really well. The public have been amazing. Everyone stayed at home. So the curve has very much been flattened and we've not been hit with as massive a surge. You know, we've been hit with a surge that we could cope with as opposed to a one that we couldn't cope with. So it's been good.
Joe, in that environment when there's so much sort of misery going on and sadness going on, and how do you keep morale up? I mean, if you're sort of a lead consultant and in the position you are, I suppose you're going to get a lot of people looking to you. And how do you keep morale up in that environment and keep sort of keep them going, keep people pushing on and working in that?
Yeah, I mean the team spirit in our department's amazing. We spend a lot of time talking to each other, I guess. You have to be able to see the funny side of things. You have to be able to see the good things that are going on around you as well as the bad things. Webinars have been a bit of a revolution for us. A lot of our junior doctors have been redeployed to work in other specialties in medical specialties. So we've been doing kind of daily webinars with all of them from various different parts of the hospital to keep everyone together. And I think it's things like this that you really appreciate what a great, you know, fantastic set of colleagues that you work with. And you know, everyone, not just doctors, you know, physios, nurses, porters, you know, the lady who makes the coffee in the coffee shop, it's been on free ven, you know, just stupid little things that makes everyone pull together as an organization. So it doesn't really matter whether you're a doctor, a nurse, or whatever job you do, you're there in the same organization working towards the same thing. That the team spirit, much like in elite sport, to be honest, you know, it's not all about the performance on the mat. It's about everything that's happened and the massive team of people over the months and years beforehand that's made that performance possible. So big team effort.
Yeah, have you learned anything sort of new from being in the sort of different environment from what you used to? You're not so much the forefront of the trauma stuff anymore. You're in the mix of it. Have you learned anything new or had to recall on anything you had and probably not practiced for a while?
Yeah, so certainly I've done more acute medicine over the last few weeks than I have for a while. I had a close call where I thought I was going to have to deliver a baby in fracture clinic, which thankfully I didn't, but that caused a very quick crash course on Google on how to deliver a baby. And I guess all the things, it's given us a newer appreciation of perhaps what our junior colleagues do, in that a lot of the stuff that they would normally see on call that doesn't come anywhere near us anymore, we've been treating. The things that we do routinely, doing that without some of the normal luxuries that we have, you know, without being able to get scans on people, without being able to have, you know, with every facility working that you normally would. So you're relying on your instinct a lot more. And your judgment, it's been really good. This will to look at a positive that's come out of this will have changed the face of healthcare forever, and not, you know, obviously in the obvious bad ways, but also in actually in a lot of very, very positive ways, in that it's made us all find new opportunities, change the way we do things. So although it's been tragic, the number of people that have passed away from this, there's a lot of good going to have come out of this towards when it's all over, towards the end of it.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think we've all ended up with a new perspective on life in general, but also in terms of our working environments. We've had to be more creative and be inventive with how we've been working. So I think you're right. There are a lot of big opportunities that have unfortunately had to come off the back of something so horrible.
I did find it interesting the comparison you made between the multidisciplinary team and in medicine alongside the way that that's conducted in sport. So you've now been CMO for how many years, Joe?
It's coming up on four.
So four years CMO of the British Judo Programme. So in that time, I've had the pleasure of travelling to a few events with you, and it's always good fun. What's your favourite experience of working in the international judo environment so far?
So I come down to the centre and spend a day down there every 2 weeks, which I mean is fantastic for me. It's a complete break from what I normally do. In terms of the travel, the European Games in Minsk last year, so being in an athlete's village environment was completely new. And not one specific trip, but I think that when everybody's away, the kind of camaraderie between the whole team, being in such a high-pressure environment altogether is amazing. The World Championships in Japan last year was something else. To actually be able to walk into the Budokan and the Kodokan, the kind of the birthplace of the sport, and see the chair sat there was amazing. From someone who's done judo since they were a nipper, then you know, you see that image on the wall of your dojo, and then to actually get to walk in there and be there for real was something else. It was great.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a similar experience for me, having been involved in judo for 20 plus years and had never actually been to Japan. So I had the same sort of experience as you, so I could totally understand where you were there.
Yeah.
And likewise, the camaraderie on the trips, it is always good fun, and it doesn't necessarily matter if the results are going our way or not. We do sort of come together as a unit and sort of work towards a common goal and have a good time in the process. So obviously you deal with some of the sort of nastier elements of the sport. It is a contact sport. People do get hurt, and some of those injuries are fairly horrendous. What would you say has been probably the most extreme example of an injury you've seen while working in judo so far?
So in our athletes, since I've been CMO, I think there's two really that stick in my mind. We had a full house elbow dislocation at the World Championships last year, which, you know, for a lot of athletes could have been career threatening, and that athlete's just been amazing in how she's dealt with it. And the other one, we had a knee dislocation, which again in for any elite sport is it's not just a career threatening injury; it's a limb threatening injury. You know, it could have led to all sorts of bad things, amputations and all kinds. But the player that's dealt with that has just been absolutely amazing. And I, on both of those injuries, I think the reason that they stick in my head so much is that I was there when they happened and saw them happen on the mat. So to go from that to seeing them back in their gis and back on the mat afterwards has just been great. Probably the worst injury, I think, in terms of life-threatening injury, going back a few years ago, there was a European Open event at K2, when one of the overseas athletes had a really horrific femoral shaft fracture, that's a thigh bone. It was one of those freak accidents where she just landed with her foot behind her ear. And again, that was, you know, that's something that's life-threatening. It's not just career-threatening. But in all three of those cases, you know, having seen them happen, to get the players back on the mat, it's not just been a massive effort on their part, but it's just been a huge team effort. And part of the reason they stick in my head, I think, is that you can see everything, all the pieces falling in around them to get them back on the mat, and all the effort that's been put in by, you know, the fantastic group that we work with.
Is it like you the injury happens, a trauma happens, and you go away, and then you fix it, Joe? Is it then like it must be so much trust on your part that knowing that you've done that work to go, okay, get this person back doing the same thing again? Like how does that sort of feel from your perspective? Of you've gone through the surgery, the hours of surgery to correct what's happened, and then you know that athlete's going to go straight back into that environment and potentially go and do the same sport. We're definitely going to go and do the same sport to the same level and the same sort of intensity and threatening that injury again. Is there a whole god on your part, or just an absolute trust that you know that you've done the job and everyone else is going to do their part in that?
Yeah, so I mean, your feelings, you kind of go from one extreme to the other. So you know, when you see that injured athlete step back out on the mat for the first time, you know, on one hand you're thinking, you know, my God, this is amazing. You think what they started with, and you think of all the effort it's taken to get them there, and you really value the people that you work with, and you think, you know, this is amazing. Everything that we've achieved, this is great. And then in the back of your mind, you're also sat there thinking, oh my God, what happens if they do it again? You know, every throw that they make, you kind of, your heart's in your mouth thinking, no, not that leg, land on your arm instead. So there's a degree of that, but you know, if you've got to do what you love, haven't you? And if there's no point fixing people up to give them their lifestyle, and for most of these guys, their occupation back, if they can't use it, you know, otherwise you might as well not bother. But yeah, definitely a heart in your mouth moment.
Yeah, so it certainly is a bit sort of nerve wracking watching some of them put themselves in the positions that they do. It's great to hear your sort of passion for it, though, and how much enjoyment you get from seeing them come back from injuries, as well as just being able to do what they love. So, absolute credit to you for that, because that's exactly the kind of personality we want in our team.
So, Joe, bringing it back to the current situation and the whole sort of nations pulling together behind the NHS and the key workers and everyone else is on the front line. We're clapping for you guys on a Thursday at 8 o'clock. I mean, are you feeling that in the hospital? Are you feeling that the sort of nation behind you, kind of like the big team behind you, really, as a nation in your work environment?
Yeah, definitely. You know, if on times when I've been working on at 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, then you know, it's not just the public. Everyone in the hospital who's not working goes and stands outside the front and claps. For you know, and cheers for everybody else, and you know, you can hear the people in the estates, you know, the houses around you. It's just for a whole country to unite together like that is it's phenomenal. I was on the phone to my mother 2 weeks ago, and it got to 8:01, and she hung up on me because she had to go outside and clap. I said, well, I'm on the phone, you can just speak to me. So no, I've got to go outside and clap. But yeah, it's to see everyone united like that is phenomenal.
Yeah, I can imagine that kind of support is needed, especially when it's been at the really tough times. I'd just like to thank you again for coming on the pod. It's been great to learn a little bit about what you do day to day. Your sort of the way that you work within the judo program, but also the more current issue of COVID-19 and how you've been managing with that. So I'd just like to wish you all the best dealing with what's still to come, and look forward to seeing you in the hopefully not too distant future in person.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Joe, I second that. We're like, thank you so much for everything you do, but I can't let you go without asking you, What's the craziest thing you've ever had to experience in the hospital? I mean, it's the dying question I've needed to ask a surgeon my whole life. What's the craziest moments, the ones that stand out for you?
During COVID or in general?
Well, let's just keep it COVID and there must be some stuff going on. Like, there's the COVID side of it, but I know life still goes on. People are locked in at home. Like, what's the nation getting up to
this time? The whole country's become DIY experts. So people that have never touched a tool in their lives are all of a sudden some sort of expert. So, we've had so many drills through fingers, chainsaws through feet, saws through hands. Yeah, crazy. Just because the government says that we're allowed to exercise for an hour a day, then so people that haven't exercised perhaps for 20 or 30 years have kind of taken them literally and decided to go out and do an hour's worth of full-on exercise, which yeah, hasn't ended well for a lot of people. There was a woman who faked childbirth. She was 8.5 months pregnant under the influence of sedatives while we were reducing her ankle, which was entertaining. And people are obviously bored. You know, they're bored at home. I'll keep it clean, so I won't elaborate much. But yeah, they're doing things to themselves that they perhaps wouldn't usually.
Yeah, we'll save that all for when the record is finished.
Jill. Yeah, good plan.
Thanks, Joe. And as Danny said, like, we can't be more grateful for how you're sort of serving the nation, really. During this time particularly, but just in general. So yeah, thanks again for coming on, and thanks for everything that you do.
No, thank you. My pleasure.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the final block. We will be back again interviewing some more members of staff from the British Judo World Class Performance Programme in the not too distant future. Thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you again soon. Bye bye.